Yeah, hello again. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour, and we're ready to go again. Tonight is the live show. I hope everything's going to be all right. We've already had the gremlins working this morning. I mean, right now, that have made me about 5 minutes late getting on the air. So let's hope the gremlins just stay out of the telephone lines tonight. I'm calling on to the Big Island in Hawaii, and the email I got said they're having terrible storms. So let's just hope we'll be able to keep the connection. But before we get going, before I introduce my guest, let me give you the toll-free number in case anyone does want to call in. Okay, my guest tonight is David Donnell, and he's on the Big Island in Hawaii. Are you there, David?
I am indeed, Dolores. Aloha.
Okay, aloha, because your email kind of had me concerned. tell us what's going on there right now. You said there's terrible storms.
Well, I'm sitting here in the little village of Volcano, around 4,000 feet up, right on the shoulder of Kilauea Volcano, the world's most active volcano, about a mile.
Yeah, I've been there. I know.
That's right. Yeah. About less than a mile from where the activity is, and for the last 36 hours, we have had torrential, and I mean torrential, monsoon rains. And sometimes it's so loud that I can't even hear myself think. So far the house has not floated down the hill, so we're okay.
Okay, because you did say that they were under flash flood warnings and they already had rock slides.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's there's flash flood warnings, and there are some flash floods on several parts of the island, and there have been some rock slides in some of the highways. And that's kind of normal when we get this weather. The weather itself is not that normal, but you know, that's all part of living in paradise.
Oh, yeah. But that's the way things are going all over the world anyway. They said the weather isn't normal anywhere, really.
That's right.
But you also said there's snow up there. You know, a lot of people don't realize that in Hawaii there is snow.
That's right. We have two mountains right next to us. One is called Mauna Kea, and the other is Mauna Loa. And they're both just a few feet shy of 14,000 feet. So they're both covered now. The peaks are both covered in snow. And when this rain subsides and the clouds clear up, we'll be able to see how far down the snow comes. Last winter, it came down to around the 6,500 foot level. So that's a lot of snow for Hawaii. And no doubt the snowboarders will be flying over from Honolulu to enjoy the winter weather.
I know the first time I ever went to the Big Island, it was a big surprise because you don't think of snow in a tropical climate. But the Big Island has got a lot of things about it that are different than anywhere else anyway.
It's a magical place. We feel that we're sort of living in this forest, which is halfway between a Shakespearean forest and Jurassic Park. So it's quite magical.
Uh-huh. I know when I've been there, it's like a dividing line. On one side, you have the rainforest, and on the other side, it's like a moonscape.
That's right. That's right. That's the Ka'u Desert. And you can literally stand with one foot in the desert and one foot in the rainforest. It's that perfect a line.
It's because of the eruptions and the sulfur in the air and all of that, I think, is all part of it, I believe.
I think it's partly that, and I think it's also a history of deforestation, there was a time when all of Big Island was covered in these magical forests of sandalwood trees and koa trees and ohia, and much of that was cut down and traded off to China. Oh, 150, 200 years ago, not long after first European contact, the beginning of the 1800s. And within, oh, probably 50 years, almost all the sandalwood forest had been cut down and traded off to China. It really devastated the island. And then after that, the lands turned into grasslands and the ranchers took over. And at one point in time, I think it was either the largest or second or third largest ranch in the U.S. was on Hawaii.
And I've been there, too. I've noticed all the big lava flows that, you know, sometimes they would even bury the highways the way they came down.
Absolutely. There was a several subdivisions as well as a village of Kalapana that were completely wiped out by lava flows. And the lava continues to flow right to this day. And
because he said it is the most active volcano in the world.
It is, but it's also the safest.
If anything is, if a volcano was ever safe.
Well, it's
but,
a
you
different.
Know, I think I told you my friend John Kiergor was a volcanologist right there, and
that's
he
right.
took a lot of videos.
Yes.
Of the eruptions when it was happening, when they really went down and wiped out the village and everything.
Yes.
So it's quite remarkable. But, David, I think I've known you now, I don't know, about 3 or 4 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been on the show before, but I know, I think we ought to give you some background so people will know who you are. I met David in Montreal, which is quite a contrast, Montreal and the Big Island. There's a totally opposite contrast. But you wouldn't want to be in Montreal right now, I know that.
No, I wouldn't.
Not with the snow there. But I met David in Montreal. Oh, I think I saw you 2 or 3 times up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you were going back and forth, but now you decided you wanted to stay in Hawaii.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. But let's give a little bit of background before we get into the project that you want to discuss tonight. I'm going to say some things. If I don't have it correct, you can jump in there and correct me. But David was, you were a TV producer, I mean a film producer in Hollywood for many years, weren't you?
I was in Hollywood for a few years, and I was in Montreal for many years, and background.
Like most people would think, it would be an ideal life. You had it all when you were in Hollywood. You said you went as far as you could go.
Well, I don't know if I went as far as I could go, but I certainly had an awful lot.
I'm thinking materialistic. I mean, you've turned
materialistically. I had.
I was
living the high life in Hollywood.
Yeah, you had it all in that respect. I mean, they had the big house, the big cars, the fame, and all of that. But you said it just seemed rather hollow. It wasn't enough. Is that correct?
Oh, I would think that would be hollow is a good word to use when describing Hollywood.
But I think you decided you didn't want that life anymore.
That's correct, yeah.
And then I think the last time we were talking to you, you were talking about your projects you have then with your internet TV.
That's right.
You're still doing that, though, aren't you?
We are, and we've been revamping everything, and we're about to relaunch everything in the new year, just around the corner. And basically what I'd done was gone into documentary filmmaking and interviewing people that I felt were making a difference, like your good friend Arun Gandhi. And,
yeah.
And I was interested in taking these films and these interviews and putting them on television. However, the networks were less interested, so I decided, well, I'll just create my own website, my own internet network, and start to put the films and the interviews up there. And we started to, and got a little sidetracked, and so we're relaunching everything in the new year with a brand new look, and there'll be a lot of films and interviews and clips available within the next month or so on the new DHDTV.net.
Well, I met David last month on the way over when I was going to Australia and New Zealand. We stopped in on the Big Island, and I gave a class there, so I got to see you again. And at that time, you were talking about this new project that you're really excited about.
That's right, Volcano House Project.
Yeah, Volcano House. So you told us a lot about it, but is it okay now to go ahead and tell the world about it?
Yes, it is.
I didn't want to jump the gun because you said you didn't want to reveal it until it was ready.
Well, we can talk about it now.
Okay, so why don't you tell people about this exciting new project that you've gotten involved with?
Well, all right. There's a park here called Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, which is one of the jewels in the crown of American national parks. I would say that it's on a par with Grand Canyon or Yosemite or Yellowstone. And Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, like all, many of the big parks, has a hotel and restaurant facility within the park. In fact, it's built right on the rim of the Kilauea volcano crater. So you're sitting right on the crater's edge looking down at the hardened lava floor, which we're all hoping is going to erupt and turn into a red-hot lava floor within the next short while. There's some indications right now that that may happen. And
is it really getting ready to happen?
Well, certainly there's a lot of volcanologists and geologists and various scientists here that are praying every day that it does. But there's been some geological evidence that that things are changing. So it did have a molten lava crater floor for over 100 years. So solidified back in the 1930s, but they think it's about to happen again.
Well, you know, when I was there, but you're not very far from the observatory, are you?
About a mile and a half.
Well, they said there, what is it, about 700 earthquakes that happen up there by every day?
Oh, easily.
Because they have instruments that are there measuring all of that to see the activity in the volcano itself.
That's right.
So there's a lot of stuff happening that people aren't aware of when they're visiting there.
Oh, there's half a dozen seismographs that you can look at, watch through the windows of the Jagger Museum, and measuring underground activity in the various areas. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of earth movements, or earthquakes and tremors happening daily, if not by the hour. It's quite interesting. But
and that's where they think it is going to erupt, but because of those measurements then.
Yeah, and when we say erupt, it's not as in the traditional sense of an eruption. It just means that the magma is going to rise up and fill an underground chamber, and the surface of the lava will manage to break through the floor and probably spread out and form a lava lake. Right now it's flowing in tubes underground down the slope to the next vent, which is at around the 2,000 foot level. We're at around 4,000 feet. And then from there, it continues through these underground tubes to the ocean, near the town of Kalapana, where it enters into the ocean, sometimes very explosively enters into the ocean because the lava is 2,120 degrees Fahrenheit and the seawater is probably in the 60s or 70s. So when the two meet, typically there's quite a sort of violent explosion and you see these bursts.
Yeah, that's where the new land is always being created.
That's correct, yeah. There's
so you think the goddess Pele is getting ready to awaken then?
We certainly hope so. And in the park on the crater is this hotel and restaurant facility called Volcano House. And Volcano House is quite historic. I believe it was back in the 1840s when the first form of Volcano House was built. It was back then. It was just a thatched grass shack, and over the years has transformed into a more permanent structure. The current structure was built in the 1940s, early 40s, after the older one had burned down. There's still part of the original 1877 structure in place that's been fully restored, and it's quite beautiful, and it's now turned into an art gallery. But Volcano House is quite spectacular, just like the El Tovar Hotel is on the south rim of the Grand Canyon, or the Awani Hotel in Yosemite. It's a historic and beautiful structure, and it has 42 rooms and quite a large restaurant and bar area. And it's owned by the National Park Service, which means it's owned by you and each and every one of your listeners. It's owned by the American people. And the park facility leases it out to concessionaires, as they do all of the hotel and restaurant facilities in all the national parks across the country. And these leases can be for a couple of years or go up to maybe 30 or 40 years in length sometimes. And quite often there are major corporations like, a big hotel chain or a big food and beverage chain that may bid on them and run them. But we've proposed something brand new to the National Park Service this year. And that is, we proposed that as a nonprofit organization, a 501c3 tax exempt nonprofit, we propose to bid on the hotel and restaurant facilities, and if successful, to turn it into a internationally accredited hotel and culinary institute. And it would be open to the public the way it is now. Still, people would come and stay there and eat there. The difference being that the people working there largely would be students, and they would be students working towards a diploma in the hotel and restaurant industry. And we're directing this in particular. It's an employment program, is what it is. But in particular, would like to address youth at risk. So we have a mission statement. And our mission statement, if I may, goes as follows. To provide opportunity to the unemployed and disenfranchised with a focus on youth at risk through meaningful and practical education in the culinary arts, hospitality industry, and Hawaiian culture at a self-sustaining hotel and culinary institute, Volcano House, while enhancing the local and international visitor experience with the true Hawaiian spirit of aloha.
Mm. Okay, so you said you have bid on this, or what's happened with that?
The park is preparing a prospectus, and we'll release that prospectus hopefully sometime in February of the new year. And at that time, ourselves as a nonprofit will bid on the facility, and I'm sure our competition will be rough and rigorous, it'll be against major corporations. But it's interesting because national parks are all about education, conservation, and preservation. And major corporations are all about bottom line profit.
That's true.
Whereas a nonprofit corporation is all about the mission, the goal of the nonprofit. And in our case, it's to create an employment and training facility and opportunity. In particular, this economic downturn has hit everyone very hard all around the world, not just in America. But you can imagine what these tiny little islands in the middle of the Pacific Ocean are going through. If people don't have money to travel and come and visit, then everyone loses their jobs here overnight. And hotel occupancy now is down to probably 55-60% at best, and it's dropping. So you can imagine how many people have lost their jobs just in the last 6 months. And and yet the park manages to hold its own because it is such a magnificent place. It's such a special place. It's such a sacred place. It's considered to be one of the two most sacred places in Hawaii by Hawaiians, and the other being Mauna Kea, the 14,000-foot-high peak that's just a few miles away from Kilauea. And the visitor numbers have maintained steady coming to Kilauea and to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. So the traffic is here, and we believe that training people to grow food and to be able to cook food and feed people is a good thing, no matter what type of economy we're in. And it's about the future as well, because the people that we're addressing are just starting their lives. And so it's about giving hope to people and giving skills to people, giving life skills to people, and being able to empower them to feed themselves nutritiously, but also feed others as well. So we feel very good about this project. A nonprofit has never competed in this manner before. And
it's always been organizations?
It's always been corporations, for-profit corporations. And so, and our nonprofit is about education, which is, after all, the mandate of the National Park Service. So we seem to have a hand and glove fit here. And it's just a question of us mounting a credible proposal surrounded by credible people and having the sufficient financial background to be able to, clearly indicate to the Park Service that we would be the best choice. And we think we are.
Yeah, I know when you discussed this with me last month, I thought it sounded like a really good idea. And I know your heart is really in this. This is something you really want to do.
It is. It's, you come to Hawaii, when one comes to Hawaii and they're greeted with the spirit of aloha, it's quite a magnificent feeling. And it's something that never leaves you, no matter, even if you never are able to return, it's something that stays with you for the rest of your life. It's a wonderful gift that the Hawaiian people give to foreign visitors. And yet, when you come to live here, you get to see behind the veneer of tropical paradise, there are an awful lot of people that are struggling. There's a place not far from us, just slightly down the mountainside, called Fern Forest. And it's an area where people go to disappear. It's to sort of fall off the grid. A lot of people lose their jobs and they become homeless and they don't know what to do. And they manage to get themselves together with a tarpaulin or a tent or, a few possessions, and they go off into the jungle and they just set up camp, almost homestead or squat. And
they just live off the land, you mean?
Live off the land. And, they're proud people and they don't want to accept help. And, interestingly enough, we ran into this gentleman, Father George DaCosta, who's a retired priest from the Hilo Parish, a Hawaiian priest. And he had been involved in social justice and causes for the less fortunate all his career. And then there came a time when he retired, and he, along with some others, get donations put together, and once a month on the third Thursday of every month, they go down to this area of Fern Forest, and there's a little community center. Community center sounds really luxurious. It's three corrugated tin walls with a tin roof. It's completely open air, and so whatever temperature it is, and it can get cold. Right now outside for Hawaiians, it's quite cold. Up here, it's around 55 degrees Fahrenheit. So if someone that's used to 85, if it's 55 and they don't have any sweaters, that's cold. And
yeah, I remember when we went up there, it was quite a different from being down at Kona.
Oh, yeah.
When you climb there, you can feel the difference.
Oh, you can feel the difference. And, I mean, it's freezing. It's below freezing on the tops of the mountains. So, but
we went all the way up where the snow is.
That's right. But, you know, so once a month they go down and they get donations from various stores and whatnot, and they cook a hot meal. And it took months and months, it took almost a year to convince some of these folks to come out of the jungle, literally come out of the jungle and come and have a hot meal. And there was no gimmicks. They didn't have to listen to any sermons. They didn't have to be converted. They didn't have to talk about anything. They didn't have to talk to anyone. All they had to do was pick up a plate, stand in line, and get food placed on their plate and sit down and eat it. There's absolutely no strings attached. So that's something that Ann and I participate in on a monthly basis, and it's been a very rewarding experience. And recently, one of the young kids that shows up for these meals, one of the young kids in Fern Forest was picked up by one of the members of our group that cooks, and they started talking to them about this Volcano House project, and this young girl was so excited. She just lost her job, and her brother just lost his, and their dream was to learn learn how to be a chef.
Uh-huh.
And when they heard that there was the potential for the possibility for this institute to be built at Volcano House, they were so excited. They wanted to take down our phone numbers and stay in touch with us and understand how they could apply and how they could qualify. And so it was really just an obvious, strong indication from these young kids who are living in these really desperate circumstances. I mean, they don't have any electricity, they don't have any running water, they don't have any bathrooms, they don't have any walls, they have a tarpaulin or a tent, you know, some sleeping bags,
yeah.
And they're living outdoors 24/7. And so for them to be excited and have hope just from a conversation, it just shows you the power of an idea. And so it's...
I bet they aren't enjoying this weather you've had in the last few days because you said it's been raining for 30
minutes. Oh, I'm sure they're not. I'm sure it's miserable because it's raining so hard and the volume of rain is so intense that you just can't imagine how much... well, picture all of the news items that you see on the national news of floods and torrents, and just recently the other week there was a water main that burst on the East Coast and it turned a regular residential street into a river. Well,
yeah,
you can imagine that's the type of thing that happens here as well. And so I'm sure their lives are not happy right now, but you know they have incredible strength. And you know, just reactions like this from kids like this young girl tell us that we're on the right track with this idea. And so we're about to launch our website. Our website will be launched very shortly, hopefully New Year's Day, January 1st. And it's volcanohouseproject.org. And
that's the website.
That's the website for the project, volcanohouseproject.org. And people,
that's all in one
word.
Volcanohouseproject.org.
That's right.
Tell people how it's progressing and how you're coming along.
Exactly. And we're going to have a petition where people that once they read the website and see some of the pictures and watch some of the films, if they feel that they would like to support this just morally, there'll be a page where they can just sign on and just put their name and what state they're from or what town they're from, and just say that, you know, they think this is a good thing and they support it. And we're also going to have a page where people that would actually like to apply to go to the Institute can also put their name down as well. And we just want to compile signatures of people that want to support it, so that when it comes time to go to our local politicians and say, look, this is a good idea, and the people think this is a good idea, and here are the names of the people that think it's a good idea. I don't know if you just heard what I just heard, but there was a loud thunder crash just outside.
Okay.
Right,
so
now
I didn't hear it here, but you know, we were a little worried something might interfere with the phone line.
Well, it was the thunder was so loud it shook the floor underneath my chair. So you know,
the powers that be are giving a statement here anyway.
So I think it was confirmation that the forces of nature agree with our project. At least I'm hoping. I'm praying that that's the correct interpretation.
Okay. So I couldn't hear it on this end, but let's just hope it holds off. We keep the phone until we get to the top of the hour anyway. Yeah. But you said, now these are going to be the local politicians, the ones, you know, why you're the ones that are going to have to decide, or does
No, the decision is made by the National Park Service, and as I understand the process, when the time comes to submit our bid, we submit it to the local park headquarters, and then they would submit it to Washington, and then Washington reviews it, and they in turn submit it to a selection committee that's comprised of National Park Service employees from fairly experienced employees from across the nation, and hopefully some of them who have actually worked and served in this park in the past. So it's a decision that's made within the park, and from my understanding, there's no political interference. However, having said that, it's always, I think, a good idea to have the public support and your local politicians' support backing the idea. It just signals that if the park were to favor one proposal over another, that whatever proposal that they would favor has the support of local citizens and politicians, and that they're not going against the grain or going against the current. And
it just occurred to me, you know, the new president, Obama, is raised in Hawaii. Maybe he might have something to say about it.
Well, we'll definitely be writing to President-elect Obama. There's no question about that. He's on the top of our list. Whether or not he'll actually read what we send him, we don't know. It has to get passed, I'm sure, quite a few filters, quite a few aides that will be filtering.
And that's it. You don't ever get direct to him, but I was just thinking this might be something he would want to support if he knew about it anyway.
Well, I think he would. He's his wife has stated publicly that in order to understand who Barack Obama is, one must first go to Hawaii and learn about Hawaii. And once they understand Hawaii, they'll understand who he is. And I believe that to be true.
He's over there right now.
Yes, he is. In fact, I'm told that at one point, he's here for 2 weeks, and he's been staying in Kailua area on Oahu and visiting the U.S. Marine Corps base frequently over in Kaneohe Bay. But I'm told that he's supposed to come over to the Big Island at the latter part of his visit. However, if these rains continue, I don't think he'll be doing that.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Probably wouldn't be safe anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. Hmm. Well, when are these decisions made? How much of a timeline are you going to have?
Well, the prospectus is going to be issued in February. And then we have 3 months, 90 days, to submit our proposal. And then after, so that brings us up to somewhere in May. And then after that, they take another 3 to 6 months to make their decision. They could make it quicker. They could take a little more time. But regardless, the decision will be made before December 31st of 2009, a year from now, because that's when the current lease expires at that time. And
well, something has to be decided before the lease expires then.
That's right. And then it's just it's kind of like the change in the presidency. It's just an orderly transition. There's a transition team that goes in and you know, they look at the books and they look at the reservations and they talk to the staff and then it's an orderly transition from one concessionaire to the next. And Volcano House remains open and doesn't skip a beat, and visitors keep coming every day. Volcano House tends to be booked solid well in advance. Sometimes they get reservations years in advance. And with 2 million visitors coming through the park every year and only 42 rooms and 365 days in a year, you can imagine that it's but you know, it's not to discourage anyone that's listening that may want to go there. I'm sure there's always the possibility of getting a room, and there's you know, you can imagine that last minute cancellations are not infrequent because Hawaii is 2,500 miles away from the nearest landmass, so it's a long ways to come for most people, and. And so travel plans do change. So, you know, all you have to do is try, and you'll probably be successful in getting a room.
So, and anyway, even if you do succeed in getting this at the culinary school you want to have, the hotel will still remain in business. So,
well, The culinary school, the way we will work it is there are other buildings where we can set up classroom structures. There's the thunder and lightning again. I tell you, Dolores, I'm living in Jurassic Park. The only thing that's missing is a Tyrannosaurus Rex to come running out of the 500-year-old hapu tree ferns, you know.
But they come in and crush your house.
That's right. We'll have classrooms set up and facilities, and there is a dormitory as well in the park right now. And we'll make sure that anyone working there currently doesn't lose their job. And in fact, they'll also be offered opportunities to even participate in the curriculum so that they can upgrade their own experience. This whole idea happened many years ago when we were on Oahu. A friend of ours had asked us to come up with an employment plan for a depressed area, economically depressed area of Oahu. And they had some abandoned sugar mill buildings, which are like large airplane hangar structures. And so they had asked us to, and so we came up with this idea, and partly was because back in Montreal, Canada, we have a very good friend, who's a world famous chef, Chef Jean-Louis, and he's been on the Jay Leno show, the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and he's been on Discovery Channel and TLC and all across Canadian television in France and Switzerland. And he happens to be the head culinary professor at the Montreal-based International Hotel and Culinary Institute. And so he had offered to put together some of his retired colleagues and to come to Hawaii for 6 months to set up the curriculum and train any of the chefs, the local chefs and the local administrators on how to run the institute effectively. And so he has once again offered that opportunity to us here. So we have some really wonderful people on the institute side that would be able to come and help us structure this. And they would form a selection committee and interview local chefs and administrators, and then once hired, they would be properly trained to be able to run the institute, and then Jean-Louis and his colleagues would just withdraw after 6 months and go back to their jobs. And by the way, I should tell you a little bit about Jean-Louis. He's a very interesting man. He's from Madagascar. He's an indigenous Malagasy. And he won a scholarship to go to Montreal 30, 40 years ago. I think it was Hilton Hotels. And he was trained as a chef. And he's become a five-star chef. And he and his wife, who is... has just passed on a couple of years ago, they started the French version of Chefs Without Borders. It's called Cuisiniers Sans Frontières. And so what he does is he has these benefit dinners, and people donate money, and they take the money and they fly over to Africa or Madagascar or different places to these impoverished nations. And he selects 18 kids, and he literally goes into the jungle and he finds 18 kids. He took a 16-year-old girl who was living in a cardboard box, and amongst others, and he brings them to a facility where they get them all showered and cleaned up, and they dress them in new clothes, and they dress them in crisp white chef uniforms, and they train them in a commercial kitchen. And out on a farm, and they give them a 3 month crash course, and they teach them how to plant, to grow, to harvest, to ripen, to prepare, to cook, and to serve food. And his philosophy is that cooking starts in the garden. And so, at the end of the 3 months, they graduate with, and they receive a diploma, and then he personally gets them into his car and drives around to all the local hotels and restaurants until he finds each and every one of them a job. And he doesn't leave the country until everyone's employed.
Wow.
And they've been doing this for several years now. So it's phenomenal what he's accomplished. And we're hoping that he'll not only help us set up Volcano House here, but he'll set up the Pacific region branch of Cuisiniers Sans Frontières, because we'd like to see graduates of the Volcano House Institute spread out across the Pacific and the Australasia region, doing exactly what he's been doing with his colleagues in Africa, and do this in his name and in his foundation's name. So there's a lot of good synergy here, and just a lot of opportunity. And, of course, we're talking about a place that is one of the most beautiful places on this planet. It's absolutely breathtaking to be in Volcano House and look out through the picture windows and see this massive caldera, Kilauea caldera, and then inside Kilauea caldera is Halemaumau crater. And inside the crater is this plume rising up, and bright red lava that rises up towards the surface. And to see all of this, the scale is enormous, and the spectacle is it's breathtaking. So, and of course, the most important, we've just been talking about the practical aspects of this, you know, in terms of the culinary and hotelry skills, but a big part of this is, in fact, it's, let me rephrase that, it's an integral part of it, is because it doesn't really work well without it. It's the Hawaiian culture, which is the epitome of hospitality and the epitome of sharing. And so, as part of that, we have formed a kupuna, or a group of elders, Hawaiian elders, to advise us on all things cultural. And very respected and well-known Hawaiian elders some of whom are Kumu Hulas, which is a teacher or a master teacher of hula. And as you know, hula is art, it's dance, it's storytelling, it's religion, it's oral history, it's just a magnificent experience. And so we will be bringing back into the hotel ancient hula, which is kahiko. Most people see Oana hula, which is very modern dance hula, but we will be bringing back authentic kahiko hula, authentic musical instruments. The making of the instruments will be made on site. The costumes. There'll be an art gallery, a music gallery, a hula school. There'll be a hula school present at Volcano House and performing every day.
And what someone told me when I was there the first time is that the hula that the tourists see with the grass skirts, that is not the real Hawaiian hula at all.
Well, it's typically what they see. It's a costume, sort of a variation on a theme. So they do have the so-called grass skirts. There are authentic ones that they do make, and they're made with leaves actually, and they do use them in kahiko and ancient hula, but they look dramatically different from what you would see at, for instance, at a hotel resort or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it really
go ahead.
Sounds like you have done a lot of research in making your plans for this.
Well, we have been thinking about this 24/7 for the last 3 months, but this was something, as I said, it was the revival of a project that Ann and I had created back in 2001. So it's been stewing on the back burner, simmering on the back burner, I guess, for 7 years. And, you know, just recently, it was back in October, and we were at Volcano House ourselves having dinner there one night. And one of my friends turned to me and said, you know, this place is up for lease. The lease is up. It's coming up very soon. And
coincidence.
Yeah, and as you know, I don't believe in coincidences. And
I mean, neither.
So,
but you planned it to see anyway in your mind back in 2001, and it's taken a little while to come into fruition.
That's right. It seems that our reference to time in this earthly life of ours is different, or is on a different schedule than the reference to time from other worlds.
Yeah, I always say everything has to happen at the right time,
yeah.
And it may not be our time, but it'll be when it's supposed to happen. Everything falls into place.
That's right, yeah.
So it's been sitting there, like you said, on the back burner stewing, and now maybe it's getting time to come into reality.
I hope so. I hope we're going to get into a fast boil pretty soon because, the kids here could, you know, when the economic downturn happens and people lose their jobs, a lot of people are so desperate that they turn to drugs, to alcohol, to various substance abuse to escape from their problems. And, of course, that leads to petty crime or various types of crime to be able to support their habits. And so what we're trying to do is create an opportunity for hope. And
Well, I think you're on the right track. I think you've got a brilliant idea here. But according to that timeline that you set up, they said you'll start making the submissions about February. Is that when it was?
They released the prospectus in February, and then by mid-May, we have to submit our bid.
Do you have that long to do it?
We have between now and mid-May to get our financing in place, to get our proposal completely structured, to get support from the public, support from the politicians, interest from potential applicants, and an insurance company that's willing to insure us a hotel and restaurant institute on sitting on top of the world's most active volcano.
That'll be a trick, won't it? But, you know, the force that be, if they want it to happen, you can always call in Pele, too. She might like it.
I think it'll all fall into place. I think the Kupuna is going to be definitely working on asking for Pele's help.
Yeah, because I always said she's one goddess you don't want to get angry.
No.
Because when you get angry, she blows her stack.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. The Western world has this old adage where it's easier to say you're sorry than ask permission. It's the exact reverse here in Hawaii. It's easier to ask permission than say you're sorry. And so we've been busy asking everyone's permission, and we'll continue to do so until we're successful. And I believe that we will be successful. I believe that this is going to happen. And
well,
I believe,
know,
against all odds, we're going to get this proposal through.
Well, you know, we talked before about how you create your reality, and you have to have a dream first, and, you know, all starts with a dream, and then you have to believe in it, and you put all of that energy into it. It has to happen. That's the law of the universe.
I believe it. I believe so.
It's already created. You just have to bring it into this reality. And it takes a lot of belief to do it. But what you want right now, then, is for people to go onto the website and to sign up with their support for you?
That's right. Starting January 1st, 2009, they can go to volcanohouseproject.org, and they can read all about what we've talked about. And they can see some photos and maybe some video as well. And there'll be a page where they can sign up and support the project. And, you know, we will welcome donations as well, certainly. Anyone that can contribute, or any organization or any corporation or anyone that's listening at all that wants to contribute in any manner whatsoever, whether it's financially or just by signing their name, we welcome their support, and we welcome their ideas and their comments as well. So that'll all be available to access on the website as of January 1st.
The instructions, if they want to donate, all of that is be on the website also.
Absolutely.
All that stuff will be there.
Yes, and okay. and because we're a 501c3, we're able to give a tax receipt for any donation.
Oh, okay. I was thinking I can put a link from my website to yours, too.
Well, that would be wonderful.
Anything we can do, you know, that'll get attention.
Well, that would be fantastic.
Talk to the radio station about putting some kind of a link in, too. I can talk to him afterwards. He does all kinds of things also.
Okay.
But I think it's a wonderful idea, David, and you're on the right track, and you know, it starts with a dream, and you definitely have a dream, and it's worthwhile, and it'll help a lot of people in the long run. So
well,
I think it's one.
I appreciate that, Dolores, and I hope so. I think you're right. I think that if we can establish a working model here, that this will last for many, many years to come, long after I'm gone. It'll be a working model to continuously help people into the future, and hopefully they can use it as a model to recreate the situation in other places.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You never know what's going to grow. Once you plant the seed, you never know how it's going to expand,
because
it takes on a life of its own, and then you don't know where it's going to go from there. We're coming up to the top of the hour. But I want to thank you for being on, and we do want people to check out your website if they are interested in this, and it sounds very worthwhile. So it's volcanohouseproject.org.
And that'll be live as of January 1st.
Just a few more days.
That's right.
All right, and thanks for coming on. It was wonderful to see both you and Ann in Kona just a month ago.
Well, much mahalo and aloha to you and your listeners. And if I could wish your listeners a very mele kalikimaka and a haole makahiki ho, which is Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year. And the whole new year is going to be wonderful for both of you. I know it will.
Well, I hope so. Thank you.
And I hope you don't wash off the side of the mountain. And
the house hasn't floated away yet, but we're still waiting.
Okay. Well, thanks again for coming on, and we'll be in contact.
All right.
All right.
Aloha.
Good night. Aloha. And thanks, everyone, for listening tonight.